Hey everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 6 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast. Me, Philip Ideson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. And it's been a couple of weeks. I think you had a break last week since we caught up, but most recently, let's see, you beat Cambridge in the EFL Trophy, but does it really matter when you beat your rivals, what it's in? And then you had a 1-1 against Leighton Orient at the weekend.
Yeah, the break was good. It was handy for me because obviously I got back finally home and, you know, give me a week without football stress going on and whatever else. And yeah, we came out against Cambridge. That was really easy, to be fair. And yeah, we used the squad. You know, it was young players, a couple of the new loan players got their, you know, debuts and played. So very comfortable. Should have been more. Played Leighton Orient on Saturday. Weren't great. You know, again, I said this, I'm not going to be overcritical on the podcast and whatever else, but, you know, we weren't at our best. It was like probably the manager said it best afterwards, way below our standards tempo-wise. You know, the crowd, fair play, and they tried to get us up. You know, but sometimes you need to get, you know, you need to almost...
You can't wait for the crowd.
No, you can't, but you've got to, yeah, exactly. And you've got to eat into what they're trying to give you. And I could hear it even on my TV, you know, the crowd were really trying to get, the second half, we were better, but it was just one of them games, you know, where you play 3-4 hours and you're not scoring. Orient were no threat, bar when they scored the one goal, put it that way, you know, and I don't want to, you know, obviously have a go at Leighton Orient, whatever else, you know, they haven't had a great start. They've come up, you know, they're obviously a good team. I think they won the league last year, me too.
Quite
easy. But yeah, I mean, it was... Yeah, it's a game you look back on and go, absolutely, should have won that fucking game, didn't. But, you know, we said this at the start of the season. I said this in the summer, didn't I? I said that there's going to be stages where whilst people will get frustrated and the fans will get frustrated, and I'm not, you can't use Young as an excuse ever. You know, at the end of the day, 7 of the starting 11 did play in the playoff games. So it's not like, you know, they've never played in League One or the high level or whatever else, including playing in that 4-0 win at, you know, home against Sheffield Wednesday. So... But there's going to be patches where you're not at your best or we're not at our best. And you try not to get frustrated with it. You know, just keep trying to do the right things. Keep trying to fucking, you know, work hard. You know, that's the prerequisite anytime for a Peterborough team. Work hard. Try and put bums in seats. Try and make the fans smile. Stick to what you're doing. You know, so it was a little bit under par on Saturday, but that's football. You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, people text me all the time going, oh, you know, you're right. And I'm like, you can't look at any league, you know, ever. Of where teams are, you know, like someone says to me, there's Stevenage are top, Exeter are top, and da 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 da. And I'm sure all those fan bases would wish it was April the 25th.
Yeah,
but it's not. So, you know, the window's just closed. I'm glad the window's closed. I'm glad all that settles down. I do think that unnerves teams. I do think that creates issues as regards to. I'm not advocating for closing the window earlier. By the way, we've had that debate, that argument. I'm happy it's open till the end of August, but I do think it doesn't help sometimes. And particularly around our club, there's always a lot of attention. There's always a lot of, you know, whether it was negative headlines in the press this summer, whether it was the transfer deadline drama that we covered in the last episode or whatever. So, you know, now's the time to settle down. Now's the time to find your best football, you know, find your best 11, find your best shape. And then, you know, hopefully work hard now where it's set up for a run of results that you just consistently do well. Yeah. And that's key. So yeah. So there are those two games. We have a game tonight, we have a game on Saturday. So the game's coming thick and fast, and obviously we're in the cup to Mansfield, which you'd like to win and get into the later rounds. So, yeah, so not really much to report on the posh side. You know, probably the most disappointing thing is Ricky was, you know, injured in the Portsmouth game, but thank goodness he's back quickly. You know, I saw a few posh, but there was like a stream from a few of them moaning about his injury record. But I have to say, God bless the kid. He's about 20. He now, you know, most people with the ankle injury he suffered a couple of weeks ago would have been out for a month. He's actually coming back quicker from injuries. You know, I can see the changes and differences and improvements in that kid all the time. Whereas people would say, oh, he's made a glass 2 years ago and it would take 2 months and da-da-da-da-da. Now he's responding and coming back quicker. There's just baby steps and you forget sometimes 20, 21. You know, again, played over 100 games. So for somebody who's always injured, according to some people criticizing him after that injury, he still played a lot of games by 20, 21. So... I'm really excited. I honestly think, you know, we've been looking, you know, we have a couple of options for that striker. And I honestly think, you know, yes, he can play wide and yes, he destroys teams down the left sometimes with his pace. But I think, you know, the project that excites me, one of the projects that excites me is the staff of Peterborough turning him into a proper striker, which he started as when he first came into our youth team. And then he was changed to a left winger because I think he'll, even by accident, score a load of goals just because of his pace.
Yeah,
and also create havoc and red cards. So him with Malik and obviously Jacob, the new boy from Swindon, I'm very excited about our striking corps you know, fighting for that one spot. And I think the other thing at the moment is a couple of our best players, you would say, would be up there with the best players in League One, are, I'm not going to criticize them or whatever else, they're not at it yet. They're not firing yet, but they will. You know, they're far too good of players not to be. And when they start firing, you know, we just have to carry ourselves until they start firing. And then when they start firing, then it makes us, because and they're in key attacking areas. It's not like you're saying, oh, one's a right back and one's a, they're a big part of our attack. So those players will come back to form. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what we do when they do. So again, I'm not going OTT and whatever else. I'll let other people do that.
Now, you mentioned Ricky was originally striker, and then there was some work done to turn him into a winger in the youth system the last couple of years. Now, when that happens, is that
didn't agree with it?
Yeah, is that because there's a gap in the first team that you tried to develop somebody in, or because too many people at youth level in the same position?
Yeah, it's the opposite. I remember having a big argument when Harrison was about 16, 17, and our youth people turned him into a left back, left wing back. They were playing him out there. We always saw him as a winger, as a 10. And I always remember saying, Steve Evans was our manager, and I'd meet with all the youth people and said, do you honestly think Steve Evans will pick a boy that size in his team? He's never getting in the Steve Evans team.
Yeah.
So you can play him left back, left wing. I'm telling you, the only way he ever gets in the Steve Evans team is you have to look at youth to the first team management is if you play him as a winger or a 10. The only way he'll ever get in the team is of his deliveries. You know, but Steve Evans would look at him in an under-18s game and wouldn't even notice him because you'll see a 5'9". That's not what our manager at the time wanted. He wanted strong, big defenders. So, you know, Ricky was changed for whatever reason, the coaches at the time, he was a striker when he broke on the scene at 14, 15, or, you know, we always knew he's electric and pace. But the way we started playing 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, he suddenly became a left-sided forward. It's like saying Mo Salah is a striker, but he's a wide right, really, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He plays wide right in the front three, but he's an attacker. And because his goals are so much, because he's so prolific, you automatically think, well, he is a striker. But we always go back to the old days, a striker's a number nine, it's someone down the middle. So, you know, my opinion is that Ricky is a striker. If you look at what he has, he's now got physicality, he's 6'1". He's probably one of the quickest players in the Football League. He can score goals. We've seen that. Yes, his record's not great, but he can score goals. And that's something you can improve as well. You know, I've seen many strikers we've sold for millions, bringing them in at 20. Craig McHale-Smith at 22, 23 couldn't hit a barn door. Mm-hmm. So whilst sometimes our fans get frustrated, I always go, well, if we were to see him in a League Two team at 20, I'd want to buy him.
Yeah.
You look at the raw materials. Yeah. Absolutely. If you go by our whole scouting thing on strikers and forwards, I'd be probably paying £1 million for him in League Two. Mm-hmm. Because I'd be going, that's a project that we could turn into 10x. We bring him in, develop him, make him better. He'll start scoring. We're selling him to top of the champ, Premier League, whatever. So there is so much upside in him. What he needs is, I'm convinced if he played 10 games in a row without injury, without being dropped, I'm convinced he would come away with at least 6 to 7 goals in 10 games. Mm-hmm. So there is excitement there. You know, the Chelsea boy's getting up to fitness. He hasn't had a preseason, so he'll be a couple of weeks out. But again, he's exciting. And Jacob's exciting everyone in training, the pressing, the striker we got from Swindon. So we're good there. You know, Clark Harris has obviously played the last game, whatever else. But, you know, at the end of the day, the future's bright in the attacking areas. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's where I am with that. So, yeah, frustrated at times, but it is what it is.
You alluded to the fact that we're recording on the day of the Cheltenham game. So either we will never record, it's a first for us, we'll either never record on match day ever again, or we'll be recording every episode on match day.
I'm getting over the OCD. I can't, you know, I promised I'd try and change. So I am. I'm trying to stop all of that, you know, not do certain things. I have to get back to being normal. This OCD stuff is like driving me over the fucking edge, you know? And to be fair, this week, you're in New York working.
Yeah.
I've got a massive week. I've got a big meeting tomorrow in Vero Beach regarding sports stuff and whatever else. Thursday and Friday, my son's been nominated in the top four homecoming king and queen with his girlfriend. So on Friday, I've got to drive his car around the school. He's got like a convertible. So they sit in the back of the car and you drive around the loop in the morning. Then Friday night, they've got, in America, it's Friday Night Lights, college game football. So we've got to walk him out at halftime. And then the nominations, obviously, are spoken about. And then the official king and queen are crowned. So who knows, is he win, is he not win? And Saturday night, we've got homecoming. And I've now got three high schoolers all going to homecoming. So it's fucking, it's manic in my place. That way, work and a lot of stuff going on. It's just nonstop, you know? So, yeah. And
I hope you've been practicing driving slowly and not braking suddenly.
You know me. I'll take off around the car park with me two kids hanging off the back of the car. You know what I mean? So there will be videos and stuff like that, you know. And I've just got so much on my plate. I got my old man going out and doing a work assignment for me on Sunday and Monday. He's going to have to visit a USL team, potentially mm-hmm. getting involved in the USL and stuff like that. There's an opportunity where it's a really funny idea. I'm actually going to, you know, I've always said, I think American football, as we call it, soccer, as they call it, I think with the World Cup coming up, the Olympics after that out here, with the Messi effect, the Apple effect, you've heard me say this before, I think things are going that way. And I think there's opportunities. And I've always said I'd like to get involved stateside in an opportunity potentially. So the idea being is that, you know, me personally, I can't do it. But I'm thinking what I'd like to do is an idea is, because I think it would bring a lot of eyelids on it, is get a collective 7, 8, 9 owners in England mm-hmm. together with me on this project. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to suss out a project and basically analyze it and look at it and whatever else, if it's doable. And it's in an area where potentially to go to the MLS type thing and then put together a plan and then give it to some owners I know, even ones who I don't know, if any fans want to nominate their owners to come in on it. I think it would make a lot of good publicity and a lot of good headlines. You know, a lot of English-based owners.
English taking American soccer.
Are basically taking on a project in the USL now, you know, the top league in the USL and, you know, spearheaded by me. And I think, you know, it's actually quite interesting and if it makes sense, it's doable. So, and I think we can have a good footprint on what goes on over here. So I know there's already a few minor investors from England and, you know, I think the Ipswich owners are American, have an interest in one of the USL teams and, but actual British and Irish based owners as well. So it'd be good, you know. So I've reached out to a few owners, a few ex-owners recently. I knew, you know, one of them was working in New York, funny enough. So, yeah, I think that would be, you know, quite interesting as a collective. We're always talking about you owners should get together more and be more friendly and da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah. So the old man's gone out and having a few days looking at a potential project. Only because, again, I've got, like, then college stuff with my son going on, visits and whatever else. So, yeah, it's kind of like non-stop at the moment.
Well, I'd be bored if it was – I can't imagine you being any other – there'll always be something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. Quick shout out, by the way, on the podcast. Carol Jackman's mother, and I call her Mama Jackman, has broke her hip while on holiday. She's recovering and sending her nothing but love. And hopefully she'll be back when I'm back over in the UK. She'll be my guest in the director's box as she's recovering. So she's like one of our older posh fans. She's absolutely passionate through and through. So her daughter, the lovely Carol, sent me an email today just saying that Mom broke her hip on holiday and stuff. So I'm gutted for her. You know, she's a lovely lady. So sending our best wishes to her.
So where should we go? So I could talk a little bit about
Bradford. Bradford. Don't upset the Bantam fans. I've seen there's been a bit of aggro online. Is there? Did I see someone's attacking the owner online? Is he online, the owner? Has he got a Twitter account?
So he has an Instagram account. Okay. He's connected to, he does a lot of racing. So that's kind of his passion. Yeah, motor racing. That's I guess his passion project. And so because he's so anonymous, you know, and there's never really anything that he never releases anything to the public, then I guess whenever the natives start getting restless, they start going after his Instagram account instead. So I think that's about.
But obviously I'm out of the loop and I'm not really watching results at the moment, but you've drawn a couple of games, right?
Yeah, we're down in 70. I mean, again, you say about positioning, whatever. We've won 2, drawn 4, lost 2. But we've really had the last 2 home games, we drew 1-1, both the Grimsby and Harrogate, both of them with basically last minute injury time equalizers. Both of them really, we played that bad. It felt like a defeat, even though we got equalizers. You know, I don't think I've seen people celebrate any less than they did when we scored against Harrogate in the 95th minute. So it's getting a little bit toxic again.
Oh, no. Are they turning on Juicy?
Yeah, sure. So like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that honeymoon period is over. Well, now it's, you know, it quickly goes from that to he's got no clue. And, you know, it's just a matter of time. And who are we going to bring in to replace him? You know, all those conversations, at least social.
So they're gone after the owner, they're gone after him, they went after Ryan recently. Mm-hmm. Is it always the, you know, like a posh, there's a certain, and it's a very small element of the fan base that are, you know, anti-Dara, anti-whatever. Yeah. So you always know when things aren't great or, you know, whatever, it's time, they're coming. And I'll be really defensive and fair to all the posh fan base, even the DMAC out crowd this season. They've taken what I said in the summer really well and backed off. Now, that doesn't give the team the right not to try or to try and go and win or whatever else, but they've given the team a lot of grace. and are giving them a lot of grace and whatever else as we, because I think I came out and said in the summer, it's going to take a bit of time. This is the project. Get behind it. We're not winning the league by 20 points. We're not scoring 200 goals, but we'll be good. So obviously you've got your certain element to the Bantam fan base. Is it the same ones that always rear their ugly heads, or is this now a collective where, including yourself, you're just like, for fuck's sake?
I think it's the same ones that are always vocal, but I think that the discord is growing. Uh-oh. You know, it's really poor performances. It just feels like there wasn't that much to change last year, and we changed a lot, almost tried too hard, you know. And
but how many players did you lose from last year, Phil?
How many do
you know? You're starting 11 in the playoffs in the run in. I said to you just a minute ago, we had seven of our starting 11 on Saturday, played in the 4-0 win against Sheffield Wednesday. So you would say, okay, Peterborough's got a pretty strong spine there of people who were there for the playoffs, even though they've gone younger and brought players in. How many of your starting 11 in the playoffs are still there?
So I would say in the first team that, well, we did have some injuries, so I'll give us that at the moment.
Yep.
But you're probably about the same, you know,
okay,
5, 6, 7. The core of the team last year is the core this year, but it was the whole changing tactics, trying to play back three, you know, buying players to fit that formation. That formation didn't really work. So then bringing in loan players to just make sure we got bodies in the building, because we can't just rely on that back three until January. Just seems like everything's been a little bit ad hoc.
But it's early.
But it's early. I mean, the players, you still look at the players and you think that from a quality of player perspective, we should be giving it a go. Now the league has got stronger this year than it was last year, for sure. So I don't think standing still was never an option, but it just at the moment feels like the changes we did make have made us weaker rather than stronger.
Unfortunately, you've probably committed one of the biggest crimes of the summer as a football club. And you're probably going to know what I'm talking about, whereby you've let a striker leave your building who's basically turned into Steve Bull on fucking loan. So, you know, and sometimes as a club.
We've done that twice. For Swindon in the last 5 years. Basically.
Right. Okay. So sometimes, like, thank God I'm touching wood, it's rarely happened to us. But if I saw us let a player go, you know, for example, I didn't want Joe Taylor to leave our club.
Yeah,
but nobody really at our club really rated him, multiple managers, whatever else. And I thought 19 and 20, he was going to score a lot of goals, be our next big sale. He's gone to Colchester and he's got like 6-7 goals at Colchester. So on loan from Luton. And I think by 22, he'll be a 15-20 million quid striker. So that's one I'll always look back on and go, for fuck's sake, you know what I mean? Very, you know, so I look at obviously the boy Young who's gone out to Swindon. Yeah. Tell me about him, because obviously, you know, everyone was obviously looking at the goals and what he started the season with. What you're kind of the mind, he's a bit of a meh as a striker. You weren't really fussed when he left, were you?
No.
Have you changed your mind?
Well, I mean, it shows what confidence and probably somebody playing a system that supports him does for somebody.
Okay.
You know, I think that when he came from Forest Green and he came with a good reputation. And he started out really well. He started at the beginning of last season, scored a couple of screamers in an EFL Cup game against Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah. And you looked at him and thought, he's got something about him. But for whatever reason, his face didn't really fit. And from what I gather, it's, you know, not necessarily him following direction from the manager in terms of the way the manager wanted to play. And so, you know, the opportunities were limited. So he went to Barrow. Went to Barrow on loan, basically had the same problem. You know, Pete Wilde tried to play him in a certain way, similar to the way that we tried to play him. He wasn't, you know, that's not, I guess that wasn't his game. That's not what he was willing to do. And they kind of gave up on him too. So he came back and he didn't really, you know, his face didn't fit the start of during preseason this year. We were trying to loan him out to anybody, basically. He turned down and moved to the National League because he felt that he could get something in the Football League. And I think that Swindon were just on the hunt for, they didn't have a lot of money to spend. They needed a striker. They're on the hunt for somebody, you know, to fill a gap. And they brought him in and look what he's done since then. He's showing what he can do.
And, do you have a callback?
We do. We have a callback in January.
Well, you can sell him then, can't you? If he still doesn't fit with what you do, I mean, you're going to make money on him, aren't you?
Yeah. And who knows?
Keeps going, keep doing.
Maybe if he's got 20 goals by then, he'll fit, you know, come January.
I mean, obviously that's a tough one, isn't it? When a manager makes it clear you're not his cup of tea.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a new manager by then. Yeah. But, you know, the point is it hurts every time you see a player like, you know, like I suppose the example for us would be Chimanga who went to Fleetwood. If he starts scoring hat-tricks every week, I'll be going, for fuck's sake, what do we do?
It just twists the knife in. You know, when you are struggling to score and you're getting 95th minute equalizers against Harrogate, and, you know, here he is bagging more goals, setting up more assists. It just, I think that's one of the things that's, you know, just really, it's just making it worse, making the challenges at the moment even worse, because you just see him doing well. You see Abel Issa doing really well for Grimsby, who didn't really get a chance with us. I mean, he was injured some of the time, but needed a new start, went after Grimsby, is doing the business for Grimsby. And you just look and think, oh, we had the players. All these years, we've had the players, but we've never really been able to make them into anything.
Yeah. And it's like, I guess the only problem for you, and I talk about slow starts and starts meaning nothing, with so many good teams in League Two, a slow start could be quite perilous, really, this year in League Two, because you got teams you're going to run away with the top three or top four or top five, you know. And fair play to Luke Williams, what he's done at Notts County. You know, he's really, I mean, he's not going to be there long, is he? If he keeps doing what he's doing, and he'll be on everyone's shortlist, you know, for when good management jobs come up. And I've talked about him previously, haven't I? I did a lot of analysis on him and whatever else, not knowing what was going to happen with our manager, but he stayed or not. But I would imagine there'd be clubs in the champ, high echelons ago, if he keeps it up with what he's doing. He doesn't spend a lot of money, but his football hasn't changed. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
You wonder, you know, is Mark Hughes on borrowed time? Is he just going to see it out and quit, you know, because he doesn't need it? Is he going to see out his contract? It's going to be an interesting few weeks. You know what? Something you said earlier about the fact that your fans, the ones that are usually the first on the bandwagon when things go wrong, and they've been giving you that leeway, it's all about expectations. You know, you set the expectations. And so last year, you know, the expectations was you're going for a promotion push. And, you know, when it didn't look like that was happening, you were getting all the crap. Now the expectation is just give these kids some time and they will come good. Whereas for us, you know, the expectation is always we're going to be, you know, walk away with the championship. Now, whether that's reality or not is a whole different thing, but that's what fans of Bradford City expect when they play in League Two. And so when you're not meeting the expectations, then that's when the knives come out.
So I guess the title of the episode will be Promotions Aren't Won in September.
All right, let's make it.
Regards Bradford.
Yeah.
It's not the full title. you know, calm heads and calm minds, you know?
So, yeah.
It's, well, look, who have you got this Saturday?
So we have Newport away on Saturday, and then we have Middlesbrough in the League Cup next Tuesday.
Okay, so look, maybe you're going to find some comfort in the away results for a while if the home results is a bit too much pressure at home. So, you know, and I guess you can also say, is Andy Cook firing in all cylinders? Is he struggling as well?
So he hasn't scored yet, and he's been injured the last couple and he's probably out for another 2 or 3 weeks. So we didn't have a recognized striker on Saturday.
The old false number nine.
we're teaming with wingers, you know, who are now being played as strikers because we don't have any strikers.
I get it. Okay. Well, listen, so we need the Bradford and Posh fans and us, we need a few wins. That's what we need, you know, and you know, together. That's what we need. So, okay. Well, look, enough about Posh and Bradford. Let's try and do a few more kind of, you know, subjects in football, Q&As, you know, in the remaining time. We've got something different for people in the podcast.
Yeah, we got a bunch of questions, but I want to just touch on Everton. So taken over by 777 Partners. Do you know anything about them? It seemed like they've come from nowhere.
My producer at TalkSport yesterday obviously reached out to me, the same Luke, and he was like, do you know anyone stateside to do with such and such guy? And I was like, I've never fucking heard of him. I'm Billy No Mates. I don't have a lot of friends. So no, I don't really know. No, I don't know them. Obviously, I've read the record of the clubs, which has been the kind of glaring headlines from the press who want to put a negative spin on things, where I think they've had clubs in, is it Belgium? They've had relegated, they've had clubs in, they own two or three other clubs and it hasn't gone to plan. So I don't know, you know, all I ever said was the owner of Everton, I mean, that guy's put what, 700 million in and he's just been hammered. I mean, talk about like, what's that word for like self-torture? If you want to torture yourself, spunk $1 billion, you know, and watch people have a go at you for, you know, a bit like probably with Todd Bowley's going through at Chelsea. So I don't know a lot about them. I don't think the deal's done, but I think they're already loaning money in to finish the stadium, to do whatever else. So they're obviously an investment fund. Are they a gambling thing? Is that what 777 stands for? I really don't know a lot about them. I'm sorry, I haven't prepared for my media duties today. I'm fucking busy, but you know, who knows? But I guess, you know, they've got Dyche. He's already getting turned on, obviously, for the style and the way they play. Mm-hmm. Now they've got, obviously, these new owners. I don't know. You know, Everton just seems to be that club that are hanging on every year.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is always, like, how long can you keep hanging on before your nails snap? Mm-hmm. You know, they're always seem to be on a cliff, you know, knife edge, cliff top, fucking trying to claw their way back up. But, you know, maybe that club needs an exorcism top to bottom for it to build again. Because obviously it's more historically one of the, you know, and I'm a Liverpool fan, but
yeah,
you need your derbies, you need your, yeah, you know, the rivalries. And, you know, I don't want to see Everton, you know, get relegated. I don't want to see them struggling. You know, I want those games to mean something. So maybe they need that to happen. You know, sometimes I've said this before about big clubs, you need, you know, to go backwards, to go forwards, if that makes sense. And that I've said this about
it's almost like, years. Yeah, it's like you get it over with so you can start building again because they've been just hanging on and hanging on.
It is. It's like an exorcism. You just have to go whoosh through the whole thing, you know, and kind of like, I felt like we're going through a little bit at this summer and on and off the pitch and things and whatever else. It's just a cleansing. You need a cleansing. That's what you need. You know, you need a bit of a blessing. You need a cleansing and then you need to go again. So maybe that's what Everton need. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not a bad thing. And I guess if they turn out to be not great owners or whatever else, well, someone else is going to come in and buy it. But, you know, this idea that, you know, oh, Everton are going to go out of business, or they're not, clubs like that never do. I've always said this. They'll always get rescued. Derby
always be demand rescued somewhere.
There's always demand, absolutely. Yeah. And the funny thing is, trust me, I know right now about six different clubs in League One and League Two that are people are trying to buy, brokers and whatever. And if I told you the prices, somebody, it would blow your mind. So mm-hmm. there's a massive demand for Football League clubs, you know, as regards that are in trouble. Because people think they can swoop in and save them, mm-hmm. and there's deals to be done, and da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah.
Another one, interesting one was what's going on at Man United. So they lost against Brighton. Well, they were taken apart by Brighton. You got Jadon Sancho, obviously not happy. Ten Hag fighting back. I mean, what would you do if a player, and maybe you've had a player, that publicly slammed the training or the coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's curtains. The minute a player does that with a manager, it's very difficult to repair that relationship. And, you know, my problem with the manager would always be, if you keep falling out with 70, 80 million pound signings here, you're fucking hurting the club.
Yeah.
You know, so do your job and manage them.
You can't trust them, like, with any of these players then, can you?
No, you've got to manage them, you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, you start going, you know, Anthony now's got issues and whatever else. And I don't agree with all of that when people are accusing people of whatever and then they're not allowed to do their job. I don't believe in living in a society where you're guilty first and found innocent later, but you're still guilty even if you're found innocent. So that does worry me in a society we live in nowadays, and people aren't allowed to go to work, you know, so just off, you know, accusations, but there's no charges, there's no whatever. So that is just, you know, we're going down a slippery slope there. And that's talking about Anthony in particular there. So, I would have already owned, look, it's just so toxic. It's then Gary Neville, obviously, everyone that's just out. And it's the same old thing, isn't it? Rinse and repeat. If United don't start well, it's about the owners. It's about the recruitment. It's about the players. It's how badly run they are. You know, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I'm old enough to remember a year ago, a new manager coming in, getting them in the top four, stealing Liverpool's spot, winning a cup, you know, putting another trophy in the cabinet. You know, everyone jizzing in their pants in the summer about their recruitment and, you know, their midfield was going to be better than Liverpool's and this, that, whatever else. So football is just so, like, it's almost like it's got amnesia at times. It's like, you know, you forget, you know, it's that, what have you done lately for me?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do I think of Ten Hag? I don't know. I don't know if he's drinking too much of his own Kool-Aid. I don't know if he needs to put his head down and win a few games, you know, but if I were him, I'd try and buck the trend. I'd try and get the best out of Sancho. Now, it's really funny because that kid was doing well in Germany. But, you know, there's a reason Man City let a player like him go to Germany. You know, maybe he's one of them younger players who's always had that edge to him, where whether he's been late, whether he's whatever else, he's high maintenance. Who knows? Like, you know, why are these players high maintenance at a young age? Well, when they're on 18, 20 grand a week as a teenager.
They're giving everything on a plate.
And that's a bigger conversation for how we can stop that, control that. You know, we've had some players go to jail. I've had another one recently, you know, just get sent down yesterday. You know, that was with his Flynn Clark, who, you know, whose agents and everyone around him wanted him to, you know, leave us at 17 and go to another club. And I was screaming, it's the wrong move. And we're not handling, you know, got to handle this, right? And he's now ended up in, I think, locked up for an accident he was involved in or drove in. So, you know, I've always talked about this, how you handle young people and the money, and it comes too soon. And, you know, should we put money in a pension fund until they reach 21, 23, 25? And, you know, it's too much too soon. So I don't know how Ten Hag handles that. I don't know the answer. I'm not a United fan. I do laugh as some stuff like Mark Goldberg always comes up on Twitter when he watches the games live and films himself. And, you know, it's the funniest fucking thing, you know, and you know, you listen to a United score and it's conceded and he reacts. But am I shocked Brighton fucking destroyed Man United? No, because Brighton are one of the best teams in the country the last 12 months. So, you know, I would panic if my Liverpool are playing Brighton. I watched what Brighton did to us last year. Do I think they'll do that to us this year with our new, you know, reloaded team? No, I don't. But I'd still be very, very worried. If we were playing Brighton tomorrow to win the league, I'd be very concerned, as much as concerned as I'd have playing Man City. So that's a compliment to Brighton. So, you know, the United recruitment model's not been, you know, in my opinion, anywhere near it. I mean, I saw the other day it spent 1.3 billion. So we can go on about the Glazers, the owners, and the did, and they'll put any money in. They don't do whatever. Thank fuck they didn't put any money in, because imagine if they did, they'd have spent 2 billion over the last 10 years. It would have been a bigger catastrophe. So you look at it that way. But the bottom line is that the Glazers need to sell, but I don't think they will. I think these people have been in business so long, this is what they do, and they've got an asset that's accruing it, you know, appreciating and value all the time. Yeah. Their commercial apartments like the best in business. And, you know, they're earning money out of it. So, you know, I think they're thick skinned. They don't really care, do they? So I don't know, you know, unless some Saudis go out and pay 7, 8, 9 billion for it. You know, those people, it's going to be like this probably for another 5 or 6 years. Yeah.
They're always just wanting to know the value of the asset. And
yeah, so I don't know, you know, but yeah, I mean, Ten Hag, I guess if it continues and he keeps falling out with players and players are worth money, you know, that's not good. But I also know that if you go into a season and your best, one of your strikers is Martial, and you're signing players, you know, who aren't quite fit or whatever else. I mean, I always said that, you know, put an Ivan Toney in a Man United team. And I think, and that's not me trying to sell Ivan Toney, by the way, I've just always said this. And I think, you know, Man United are challenging. So, you know, they've missed that kind of, and I know they've got the new boy Hoyland and he scored 1 and 5 in Italy and suddenly became worth 60 million quid. So I don't know. As a Liverpool fan, obviously, after what happened to us last year, you kind of chuckle. You know, because I'm kind of like, you know, I'm enjoying watching Liverpool again. You know, I still think we're a bit short in areas and we're not going to be quite there this year, but I do feel we'll comfortably be top three again.
How do you feel that the transfer window ended?
Okay. I think we were 2 players short. I think we needed a world-class centre-back. I think we probably needed one other piece maybe in there, possibly a right-back. You know, Trent's injured now. You know, the centre-backs, you know, Van Dijk with his suspensions, obviously you got Kanate, who I love, but we always knew he was a little bit brittle on the injury front. It was his record from Germany. He was always missing large chunks of games. And then the backup to that, you worry. You play a Man City in a title decider and you have to play the young 20-year-old in there or Gomez in there. Yeah. But I think I'm a lot happier with how it's looking. I like, you know, I want Nunez to play. I'm sick of seeing him on the bench. You know what I mean? Like, I watched it on Saturday. Gakpo scored, but he was a non-entity. And then I think you spend that kind of money on a striker with his ability. I think if he gets in the team and stays in the team, it's a game-changer for us in the title race. The Salah thing, I think they'll sell him in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, he'll be 32. I think if they get offers anywhere near that again from Saudi, 100 to 150 million, take the money.
Well, isn't it interesting? Because this time last year, you know, after he signed his deal, everybody was immediately saying, well, he signed his deal now, it's past it. He went on a spell of not scoring goals.
Yeah.
You know, we're stuck with this, you know, around our necks for the next few years. And suddenly now he's attracting all these bids from Saudi Arabia.
Maybe you were saying that. I don't remember me saying that. But you know, because he's still playing at a high level. But I think with a year to go next summer, instead of giving a 32-year-old another new contract and bigger money, I think if you then say to the fans, all of that money's going to go on signing, I don't know, go sign the Napoli number 9 and find someone else wide right, you know, whatever. But I just think that's the cycle. And I think if you come out of the cycle where you've sold Fabinho, Henderson, Salah, made profit on all those players when they're in their 30s, helped you reload the squad in other areas, I think it's a good thing. So, you know, it's not getting any easier now in the Premier League. So the owners are realising at Liverpool, they're not always going to be able to get away with the whole net spend. We'll spend what we bring in. You know, this probably year is the first time they've gone outside of that and spent 50, 60 million over what they brought in. So, you know, fair play, they didn't sell him. I think they would have got lynched if they sold him on deadline day, hence why they didn't sell him. But he'll get sold, in my opinion, next summer. And I'm perfectly happy trusting Jurgen. You know, I'm liking it. You know, people used to always talk about Jurgen Klopp after 6, 7 years. he couldn't do it at a club again. And I think that's what's driving him on, building the next chapter at Liverpool. Because if he can come out and build that next chapter and do the business, it puts that ghost to rest.
Well, you can refresh this. You know, you may not be able to do it with the same squad for 6, 7, 8 years.
Reload.
So then you just, you know, you kind of churn your squad and you go again and you set of players that can, you know, you can keep it going.
The great managers do that. You know, Guardiola's done that at Man City. Sir Alex Ferguson did that multiple times at multiple new teams when he got rid of the old guard, Kanchelskis, Ince. They all went down in one full swoop one summer and he brought the young ones in. And he did that, whatever. And he went through and he changed teams all the time. And then Ronaldo, Rooney, another. I mean, he must have built 5 different teams at Man United. And the point is, he won. Every time he changed the team, he went on and won. So to see that happening now at Liverpool, because, you know, you ask a Liverpool fan 6 months ago and they were looking at the midfield we had, they were looking at the squad, they were looking at everything. They were like, oh, my God. Ask a Liverpool fan now, the optimism is completely flipped. So, you know, whilst we might not win the league this year, we are going to be, we're looking like we're going to be good again over the next few years, but it'll take a little bit of time. And yeah, let's see. I'm excited by it. You know, I enjoy watching us play. First half on Saturday against Wolves, we were crap, but I put that down to the manager's team choice. When he addressed that in the second half, we look good to go. So yeah, interesting.
So one other thing I wanted to touch on, actually a couple of things. One in the Championship. So Neil Warnock leaving Huddersfield this week, which seemed a curious one that he stuck on. You know, you think the summer was a good time for him to move on. So, and it's not like they've had a bad start to the season at all.
I think the writing was on the wall when I think their owner had said something on social media, and then Neil took that to task when in one of his press conferences in his way. He's got a certain way about him. I like him. He's been very good for us. He did us favours in the summer. So they've obviously got he hasn't been backed in the transfer market.
Right.
You know, he was given a budget to bring in players or whatever else, but it's not like he was handed 10, 12, 15 million. You know, you could say, look at Birmingham recruited and they brought millions in, but they spent millions. Mm-hmm. I don't think Huddersfield spent millions. So again, you get a manager like that in, you either give him the fighting chance or you ask him to firefight. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who Huddersfield bring in. But I would imagine Warnock could be back at work again in January or February.
Yeah. I'm sure there will be a club who's fighting relegation who will give him another one last payday.
100%. Definitely going to happen.
And deserves it for his track record, you know.
100%. He's a top, top class manager. Yeah. You know, one of England's finest over the last 25 years. So you can't knock him. Everywhere he goes, he makes impact, including what he did last year there. So, no, I think, and he's obviously got loads of energy. So I don't think he's concerned about, you know, and he gets a nice payday every time he retires. And then if he needs another payday, he'll come back at it again. So,
I want to touch briefly on Reading. So they deducted another 3 points, but not necessarily about the deduction, but the request for an owner to put 125% of the wage bill into an account.
I don't know. Look, you know, I mean, I see they're constantly in trouble. I see they're constantly getting hit. Obviously, this goes back to having, is it Chinese-based owners who are having issues getting money out of the country because rules changed in China. So I can't speak for other owners. I know that obviously it's not ideal for Reading, their players, their manager. I don't know if the club's up for sale, but you do know it's a good football club. Again, it's not one of them you're going to lose sleep about, like they're going to go out of business. They won't. They'll be fine.
You know, I would like to see, I've often thought one of the ways to curb spending, or not necessarily curb spending, but to keep clubs out of trouble, is when you're signing a contract with a player, be putting money, putting wages into an escrow to be able to pay for those wages, to get over the fact that you can't have these owners coming in, spending all the money that they don't have, and then just kind of with a hope that they're going to go.
So you want, basically, if I'm signing a player on a 4-year deal, that I have to put the 4 years worth of money.
Because obviously that's not the way that the revenue model works.
But yeah, you're going to kill us. You're going to kill Bradford. Bradford is going to be self-sufficient. Without an owner putting money in, you're not going to have a team where your youth players.
But do you not think that there's something, I know it's not in an owner's interest to do that, but you look at whether it's 3 months or whether it's 6 months, or there's some portion of a contract that goes into an escrow.
I'm not big on escrows. I'm not big on putting money, you know, that's not gaining any interest or you're not able to use. I'm not a fan of that system, because you're then punishing good people for doing good things. Mm-hmm. You know, you bring in things like that, so you're punishing an owner like me. You pay your wages on time, you do things on time. Now, all of a sudden, I've got to find a lot of scratch up front at times when I can't, at certain times of the year. And, you know, so look, at the end of the day, if you want to do that and punish people who've had history with it, fine, have at it. But I think if you start punishing people who 85% of the people do things the right way, pay their taxes on time, pay their wages on time, regardless of what's written about them. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying, well, fuck you for doing all of that. Because that one asshole or two assholes haven't done it, we're now going to punish you. And now you're going to have to find a bit of extra money to stick in escrow because Phil thinks it's a good idea.
And for anybody listening to the podcast, that was a nice gesture that Darren sent in my direction.
Well, you get what I'm saying. So so it's like, yeah, but I mean, you know, by all means, punish the people who are crap at their jobs, punish the people who like bring clubs into disrepute. And again, you really want to punish a club for one person's bad fucking, you know, movements or whatever else. Look, I go back to what I said years ago. The best way to handle it is if you break certain rules, your club is taken off you by the EFL. It's run and operated by the EFL until such time it's sold. So you don't lose your club. It gets sold independently with a pre-agreed figure and whatever else. The EFL will operate and run that club, borrow money for that club if they have to from a big pot of money, and make sure it doesn't go into administration. People get paid on time and it's run prudently within the time limit to sell it. And I think if we all as owners agreed for that, it would make people think twice about doing shit like they do.
There has to be some jeopardy, you know, to the owners for taking these decisions, because, 100%. You know, in the short term, they put them at an advantage, a competitive advantage, because they're spending money that they don't have.
We had that thing with Reading about what happened in the championship, you know, where we went down by like 2-3 points and, you know, they'd constantly like broken financial rules and whatever, and had suspended points, whatever. And it's not me moaning about Reading. I don't need Reading fans on me because I've just defended the Reading fans and said they don't deserve that. But again, we did things right. Fucking, you know, got punished by relegation. So yes, there has to be a consequence, but again, we as an EFL should control the consequence by bringing rules in place, you know. So this isn't rocket science, and I've said this all along. I mean, you know, these are changes that we can make happen, you know, but listen, is what it is. You know, I could say what I want to say and then 75% of people vote either way after agreeing with you. And that's what often happens. So next question.
All right, well, let's go to some questions that we've got from listeners. So we have one from Josh Mackey to start with. He was saying, going back on the Mason Greenwood story of the last podcast, we all know the downhill slope of the career of Marcus Madison. We just talked about Flynn Clark as well. And how, you know, these players are wasting their careers because of actions that they're taking. In the lower league clubs, such as Peterborough and Bradford, would there be people identifying these players with issues or kind of getting ahead of it? Or is there even a way that you can kind of preempt players who, you know, are at risk of jeopardizing themselves, essentially? Or does it really matter as long as they're playing and the performance levels are okay?
No, of course it matters. Of course it matters. And I get the argument that you've got a 30-goal leading goal scorer, and he goes out and commits a heinous crime, you keep him in the team, you do whatever. I get all of that. You know, it does matter. I'm a dad. I have daughters. I think what also matters is due process. I think that matters as well. You know, and that's missing sometimes nowadays. There's a rush to judgment from a lot of people. I think all you can do as a club is set a culture. All you can do is try and help train, keep talking to players at 15, 16, 17, 18 level about the pitfalls out there, the players who suddenly earn money too quickly, about how to handle the money. You know, what to do. You know, the ones we've had it in the past, and I've talked about one just recently, you know, when they, you know, I'm getting a move, I'm getting this money, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be doing that. And you hear all the talks, you know, the ones who could be on the wrong path. You know, we had a few players a few years ago go and, you know, thieve from a shop, you know, and whatever. And the shopkeeper rang us at our academy and said, look, I've got these three players and whatever. So that sticks with some of those players because they're 14, 15, and then when they're 17, you're looking to give them a pro deal. It's on the record. But they did this, so they got a bit of, but in fairness, they grow up. You know, people are due second and third chances sometimes. And, you know, particularly when I'm talking about theft as opposed to going out and raping someone or being found guilty of raping someone or whatever else, you know. I didn't want to go into the Greenwood thing because I didn't know enough about it when TalkSport were asking me, and I still don't. I see all the videos everyone else posted. All I know is that he's never been found guilty of anything, and I think he's with the person that it was all involved with, but I don't know enough about it. But his career's over unless he leaves the country. We said that, and he's left the country. So I don't know what happens to him. At the end of the day, you see what everyone else sees, and social media is a vacuum nowadays. But, you know, who's the other player we mentioned there? And then I saw, you know, the Mendy one. You know, there's a guy who for 3 years was basically like, he's an animal, he's a rapist, he's this, he's that, he's whatever. But I think he was found innocent on every single charge by a jury. And it's like, and now, but I still see people I know who are still saying he's this, he's that, whatever. He's got, but it's like, but you, 3 years of his life, he's been found like completely innocent, acquitted. who's given him the 3 years back? You know, what happened to the people who accused him? And obviously there was a good few of them, and they obviously were did it for a reason. Did they get prosecuted, Phil? You've sons. You know, is the other side of that as well? So there are all those questions you ask, because, you know, like, I've got daughters, I've got sons, trying to navigate the world they're now growing up in is very, very difficult. And you know, it's he said, she said, it's the press jump in on it. It's people on social media have opinions on it. And even if your peers in a court of law, or your jurors find you innocent, you're still that person who's tarred with that brush forever. Correct.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to handle it. We've spoken about it before. There's no perfect science to it. There's no perfect answer. The only thing I would say there is maybe there should be due process. Maybe there should be a media blackout both ways. So, or maybe there should be an openness both ways, that if someone accuses you, that they have to be named as well. If you're being named, they should be named. Or the perfect thing to it would be, don't talk about either. Let it go through the process and play out. Do I stand on firing somebody who's been accused of something? I'm not into that. I don't think that's right either. Do you?
No. Now, in terms of helping the players and their own kind of personal responsibilities and decision-making, is that where the difference between a good agent and a bad agent, or is this beyond
100%?
Even agent
100%. I spoke about an agent recently. He'd been vilified and hammered and whatever else. And I knew they were with a player since they were 20. And if that player hadn't been with that agent, that player would have been in prison four times over. Mm-hmm. Because that agent has kept them on a straight and narrow. And in fact, the one time they broke up and had a period they weren't together, that player went on a self-destructed run for about 6 months, caused a lot of havoc. Mm-hmm. So, you're absolutely correct. Like, at the time, I was fighting with Flynn Clark's agent about, it's a silly move. Mm-hmm. We're in the champ. He's going to go to an under 21 academy. And I've got emails from these agents. One of them is a famous movie star. One of them is an ex-owner or runner of a big football club who's now in our league, who was having a pop with me recently. And I've got the emails from them basically saying, fuck off, he's going, and this is the best move for him. And I was like, it's the wrong move for him. So I could easily go, oh, let me pull those emails up and write them up. But I wouldn't, because I don't want to see any 19, 20-year-old go down that route, have those issues. I'm glad the people didn't die who were involved in the accident. But at the end of the day, you can see with some youngsters it going off, you know, that way. And all you can do at the time, we've done this throughout my 17 years, is call parents in and have conversations with them and say, this is happening. That player's not listening. You can keep defending. Look, everyone defends their child. Yeah. You'll defend your child, I will. But me and my wife are those parents, actually, who will go, we'll defend our child to a point where we'll go, no, we're not having that. He's a lazy fucker. He's done this, whatever. And he's got to, like, pull his finger out of his ass. And the same with my dad. No, we're those parents who aren't. The sun doesn't shine out of our kids' asses no matter what. And I think some parents out there, the sun shines out of their kids' asses no matter what. They believe everything their kids say. They fucking, it's always everyone else's fucking fault. It's always the other, you know. Well, actually, if there's enough there around it, sometimes you got to start looking in the fucking mirror. And that's accountability. And that's parents. And that's the whole thing. So, look, that's the world we live in. You know, at the end of the day, it's a tough one. As I said to you, if you in 20 years' time woke up and found out your son was a serial killer, would you still go visit him in jail? Would you turn him in? You know, it's all those questions, you know. Yeah. So it's like you do the best you can as a parent. Yeah. And then it's up to that person. We've always said, I said, my biggest imprint in the world would be to bring three good people up into the world. If I can bring three good people into the world, I mean good people, we'll have, as a couple, done our jobs, right?
Yeah, let them make judgments based on that kind of, that sound, knowing what is right, knowing what is wrong.
Correct. And that's all you can do as a parent. Yeah. It's a platform. Give them a platform. Yep.
So a question from John Bevan. Can you ask DMACC about the comment Karen Carney said on Monday Night Football last month about sponsors, and that sponsors should be 50-50 for men and women's game in terms of, I'm guessing, the amount of money that they put into the game? What do you think about that?
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense comment. I understand she means well and whatever else, but, like, for fuck's sake, nonsense. Just no sense. Irritates me when I see crap like that written both ways as regards to do this for men or do this for women. You know, I was laughing the other day. I was watching Rafa Nadal was interviewed, and they were asking him about, you know, parity of pay and all of this, about women and men. And, you know, I think it was Rafa Nadal. And I think at the end of the interview, they were trying to say, well, women, you know, play two sets, three sets, men play five, but they've got equal money. Great, whoop-de-doo. But they also bring a lot of money in. I watch women's tennis. It's the only female sport I pretty much watch, and I enjoy it. Go Iga. But he turned around and he said, is that the same in modeling? do men get paid the same as women in modeling? And the interviewer was like, So at the end of the day, I mean, I watched that segment and Neville and Carragher obviously were very quiet. But my honest opinion is, and I'm sure they agreed with me, if I put a lie detector test in front of them, because they're on Sky, Woke Sports, as I like to call them at times, they couldn't say, but she got that completely wrong. And that's okay. Listen, she's good. She has her opinion. It's valid to her. But the idea that I go and basically every bit of marketing, we bring in millions in commercial marketing revenue based on what? Based on the product. What is our most saleable product? Unfortunately, it's the men's team. When the women are in the Premier League and they're bringing in bigger crowds and they're bringing in more eyes on us, more interest, more digital interest, hopefully our commercial department will actually outsell the woman's shirt name deal over the men's. But the idea that I'm going to split all the revenue and start putting it into the women's because, well, because somebody asked or somebody came up with that as an idea when it makes no sense whatsoever, don't talk nonsense. This is where you lose arguments really quickly. This is where people just shut down and stop listening. When you start saying silly things like that, and it is a silly fucking comment and a silly argument, you just lose people. And the last thing the women's game and that industry needs is to lose people. People are interested in it. They want it to do well. You know, England have got the finals. They've won a fucking trophy 2 years ago or whatever else. You know, we want bums on seats. I'm giving our women's team a platform. We're giving them more on the budget this year where they want to have a go at promotion. They've started really well. I want them to bring crowds to our stadium. But what I can't do is have them lose money. You know, because at the end of the day, we're a business like everyone else, but I will give them what I can. And they all understand that and they work their tails off. But the day our women's team brings in more revenue based on fan experience, digital experience, TV experience, whatever else, all my focus will be just on the women.
Yeah.
God's honest truth.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
You know, but this idea that I'm going to tell my sponsor who's giving us 300 grand a year for the shirt, that half of that's going to the women's team, when he wants to sit there watching a really good League One men's team,
representing his, you know,
representing his brand or whatever, and suddenly we're now in the conference because we're not putting the same money into the men's team, whatever. Yeah. It just makes no sense. And the idea you're going to go to Nike, whoever gave, I think it was Man United, have just signed a new £1 billion shirt deal, and say that basically half of that's going to the women's team, and you know United won't be in the Champions League, they won't be going around the world representing. You're not going to do sponsorship deals that big anymore.
No, I mean, it's you're being paid for the commercial value of the product that's been on the field. And if
Correct. If
money doesn't go into then continue to sustain or build that commercial product, it's not worth the same in 3 years' time.
And if I'd sat on Sky in a Sky show and made that comment, Gary Neville would have taken me to the cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
If Simon Jordan had sat on Sky, again, it would have been a debate. And the mere fact that the two of them sat there silently and the presenter didn't say anything is what's wrong today with sports, because I do treat people equally. If I'd been sat on the couch, I would have taken it to task. And that's me being equal with everyone. And the fact that people are biting their lips, not saying anything because they're afraid of being cancelled or Sky firing them, is exactly the fucking problem with today's society. I'd like to hear people, particularly the women in sports, I'd like to hear them come out more in support of women's sports and men in women's sports who shouldn't be in women's sports. I don't hear a lot of that, do you? I particularly don't hear it from all the people working for Sky, for all the media outlets and whatever else, and there are men in women's sports. I'd like to hear them come out and talk about that, but they don't talk about that. So until they do, I'm not going to listen to nonsensical opinions that make no sense whatsoever, just because it's the thing to do. And I'm a dad of two girls.
All right. Well, on the last question I'm going to ask for today's pod, it comes from Wayne, who's a Port Vale fan. And congrats on Port Vale for they got such a beating on the first day of the season at Barnsley and have really turned that around and had a great start to the season.
Fantastic.
He says he's an avid listener all the way from the very beginning. And he just wanted to know your thoughts on the Shanahans, who are the couple that run Port Vale and the job that they've done since taking over the club.
Yeah, done really well. Popular. Carol, I believe the name is. Good people. Running the club really well. And after the start, absolutely. Like, what an effort. A bit like Bournemouth last year, losing 9-0 and people going, oh, they're down. Liverpool, whatever. And then go on to defy the odds and stay in the Premier League. So, to be fair, I've always enjoyed going to Port Vale as a club. I've always liked, whether it was, I know Norm and the previous owner wasn't overly popular, so I'm not going to upset the Port Vale fans. But I think they're in good hands there with Carol. And our family seemed to be lovely. And I saw her son getting his head scalped when they won the promotion. When he was out on the Wembley pitch getting a haircut in the dressing room. So, good for them. and you know, makes it interesting. League One certainly interesting with some of the stories this year, whether it be Exeter, Stevenage, Port Vale. Yeah. You know, that's the beauty of the leagues, isn't it? And that's what we always talk about. So yeah.
Yeah, and we, and it goes all the way back to what we said at the beginning about the regeneration of clubs.
Yeah, of course.
And how clubs that can feel, you know, Port Vale have spent some time in League Two and struggling in League Two. And, you know, you get that momentum back and you get some.
Yeah, they're not a small club.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, you go to Port Vale and you know, it's not a small club. You know, some people think, like, they call us Tin Pot, they call whatever else. Like, you know, the Peterboroughs, the Port Vales, we're not small clubs. We're fighting for our own little corner of the world, you know, against. And yes, we play the derbies of the world and we play the bigger teams and whatever else, but we're fighting for that kind of parity with those clubs. We're not demanding it. You know, like somebody just did in the previous conversation about commercial revenue being said equally, you know, we have to earn it on merit. So, and that's what it's all about. So the beauty about our league is that every year in League One, there's always one or two surprises.
Yeah.
So looks like it's taking shape to be the same this season.
Yeah. And Stevenage as well. You know, again, what a great start they've continued to make. So
would you change your mind on Stevie boy?
It's funny, you know, when people are talking about, well, who's going to be the person who, you know, people talking about Mark Hughes' replacement before, long before he's ever left the club, you know, along me, and hopefully he turns it around and it's a while before he does leave the club.
Sure.
But I think that there's more appetite given additional passing of time, seeing what he's achieved at Stevenage. That
so you didn't take my word for it before Stevenage, no?
I think across City fans generally, the hatred from things that happened in the past is dampening by, you know, continuing to see success and continue to be frustrated with our lack of success.
All right. So Steve Evans in.
Yeah. I don't think he'd want to come to us now, would he?
Absolutely. I think, well, with all due respect to Steve, even to Peterborough, it's Bradford. It's a big club. I think it depends on the project. Steve Evans is all about the project. He certainly wouldn't go to a Bradford without the backing that they could bring in 20, 25 new players. But and the project's everything. It's like my manager turning down a big famous ex-Premier League club, whatever. It's about the project. It's about what are you selling to me?
Yeah.
So, you know, do I think at the moment if, you know, Ryan said to him, well, you know, we're going to be self-sufficient and this, that, whatever else, probably very little hope of landing him, you know. But at the end of the day, it's two promotions in 2 years guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I've always said that.
Yep.
You know, for a club your size, if you did get a bit of backing, but you know, fair play to him, fantastic manager. And you know, I'm fond of Steve. You know, yes, it didn't work for us, but you know, you have to give him credit. I mean, he's like Barry; he should be getting an award in the future for what he's done for football, because to do what he's done and win the promotions and, you know, the hassle he gets, the shit he gets, the criticism he gets and whatever, and he's still there, you know, and well, Steve's probably, I don't know, in the 60s now. He's still there, you know what I mean, with that energy, with Reigns. So I've got nothing but, like, credit to pay them. You know, fair play to them. So on that note. So let's get on with it. Let's get back to winning, all of us.
I know. Well, hopefully we'll be at a happier place next time we record. But
good.
Thank everybody again for listening, as always. Please keep the questions coming. Contact at hardtruthfootball.com. You can send them via DM on Twitter, any way that you – there's a bunch of different ways you can get in touch with us. So we always field them. We have a list of them all ready to ask. So keep them coming.
Good luck, everyone. And
I'm not going to say anything about the game today because I don't want that to be used against me next week. So until next week, we will see you all again soon. Take care, everybody.